cheating on ourselves? How do we keep from cheating on ourselves? We live in such a busy society where we're always going here, we're going there. We've got our spouse that has needs. We have our children that they have a lot of needs. We've got work, and work can get very demanding, and we've got long hours there, and we're just constantly running and running and running. And how do we find time for ourselves? How do we keep from cheating on ourselves? And really, should we? Should we be concerned about this? I mean, doesn't the Bible say that we should put others above ourselves? That we should consider others above ourselves? That we should love and serve others? What about that J-O-Y, the joy thing, the Jesus, others, yourself? Isn't that in the Bible somewhere? Aren't we told to be content with the life that God has given us? I mean, should this be a priority? I mean, doesn't the Bible tell us point blank that it is bad to be a lover of yourself? It does. So should I be a priority in my life? Should we? Doesn't the Bible also say that we are to love others as you love yourself? There's a big difference between being a lover of yourself and loving yourself. Loving yourself is not the same as being a lover of yourself. If I'm a lover of myself, then yes, I have elevated myself to a pedestal where I do not belong. I have placed myself above all other things in my life, and along with that comes selfishness, greed, conceit, pride, a whole list of things that we would consider sinful behavior. But that's not loving yourself. That's being a lover of yourself. See, loving yourself simply means taking care of yourself. That doesn't mean that you're being selfish. It means that you're being responsible with the life, with the body, with the mind, with the psyche, with the emotions, with the spirit that God has given you. In fact, many times I believe that we disrespect God by not loving ourselves, by not taking care of ourselves. In Ephesians 5, Paul is instructing husbands how to love their wives. He says, husbands, you should love your wives as you love your own body. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one has ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it, just as Christ does the church. See, this subject's not talked about a whole lot in the Bible because the Bible assumes that we know how to love ourselves. The Bible assumes, because that's what that premise is based off of for husbands. Husband, love your wives as you love your own bodies. You should know how to do this. Jesus Christ, when he quotes that commandment, he says, love others as yourself, as you love yourself. It's just assumed. Jesus follows that up by sharing the story of the Good Samaritan. A lot of you guys will remember this story. It's a story of a man who was beaten and robbed and left for dead on the side of the road. And along came a Good Samaritan. And this Good Samaritan took him and he cleaned his wounds and he bandaged them. And then he took him and he checked him into an inn where he could heal in a safe, clean environment. And we look at that story and we say, that is how we are to love our neighbor. Following the example of the Good Samaritan. Well, if you flip-flop that, I believe that helps us to understand what loving ourselves means too. We're to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. You take that picture of the Good Samaritan, and if we were going to watch that as a movie, and you'd see this guy that was beaten and robbed and left for dead, and no one came and stopped to help him. And he got up and he started cleaning his own wounds and putting water and well, back then it was wine, but you'd pour alcohol in it to get things cleaned up, and he started bandaging himself. How many of us would sit there in the audience and say, you selfish person? Why are you bandaging your own wounds, thinking about yourself all the time like that? You're so conceited. And then this man in the movie, he gets up and he hobbles to the nearest inn and he checks himself into this inn where it's going to be a safe place, a clean place for him to continue healing. How many of us would look at that and say, that guy's so full of pride? How dare he check himself into an inn where he's going to be safe? I don't think many of us would feel that way. In fact, I think the comments would come if those things didn't happen. If we watched that movie and we saw this guy who was beaten and robbed and left for dead and he didn't do anything, I believe the comments would start coming then and you'd start saying, why isn't that guy getting up and doing something for himself? Why isn't he cleaning his wounds? Why isn't he trying to stop the bleeding? Why isn't he getting himself to a safe place to heal? I believe that is the perspective we would take on that. See, there is a difference between loving yourself and being a lover of yourself. Loving yourself means taking care of yourself. Taking care of yourself, I believe, from what I've understood in the Bible and my personal study, and I don't have enough time to really argue each of these things. If you need to talk later about this, then we can talk. But I believe in reading the Bible and understanding what we are made for, I believe there are six activities that we need to take care of in our own lives. That is a responsible thing that we do to honor God with our lives. And these six things are that we are to work hard. Working hard. Getting exercise. Healthy meals. Intimate relationships. Proper rest and relaxation. And spiritual nourishment. I believe that most of us here would agree that's a reasonable list. Would you agree? That's not a list where we look at that and say, ooh, that's selfish. That's prideful. That's conceited. That's a reasonable list. A list that I believe that we have been made to do these things. And that when we do these things, we are honoring God. We are taking care of ourselves in a way that honors God. Take a look at that list and ask yourself, am I cheating myself? Am I cheating on myself? Am I not taking care of myself? Do I not love myself? We should take care of ourselves. Now, at this point, many of us are asking, well, how do we do this? We live in such a busy society, a crazy society. We're running and we're playing tag team with our spouse in order to get the kids different places. We're dropping one off and the other one's going to pick him up. Well, we pick this one up and drop that one off. We're going to be here. We're going to meet here. We're going to eat here. We're going to grab it and we're going to go fast. We have long hours. We have demands at our workplace. We have chores and things around the house that need to get done. I just don't have time for myself. You know, when you take a ride on an airplane. We've got some of the guys that are back from Haiti, and they got a chance to ride on an airplane. A lot of us here, I believe, have been on an airplane, and for years they go through the same spiel before you take off. The little stewardess gets up in front of everybody, and she shares with you all these things that happen if the plane crashes from, like, miles up, as if you're going to survive. But they say, one of the things they say is that if the cabin pressure drops, then an oxygen mask will drop in front of you. They say, you need to put the oxygen mask on yourself first. Then put it on your children. Then put it on those, then help those around you. And the reason why they share that is because if you don't get that on fast enough and you pass out, what good are you to anybody? Nothing. If we are incapacitated because of the way we live our lives, how can we love others? When you cheat yourself, you're not only cheating yourself, but you're cheating your family, you're cheating your friends, you're cheating your workplace, you're cheating God. Because we can't live the way that God has expected us to live. We can't do the things that God has expected us to do. So let's take a look and see how we can live this way, how we can change things. First things first, we need to look at the chart that we looked at last week. And the idea that we have to accept these six things that we just looked at. Those six things that we have listed in your bulletin, things that we believe are activities that we were made for, we have to accept them as biblical principles. Because it's on biblical principles that we define our morals. We define what is right and what is wrong. Things that are wrong, we should not do. Things that are right, we should do. Then on top of that, we define, we define our values. What's important? What's unimportant? What's important, we move into priorities in our lives. So we build on top of that and we have our priorities. And then from our priorities, we organize our time management. So what we have to do is we have to look at these six things and we have to accept these as biblical principles. We have to make these biblical principles your priorities and allow those to govern your time management. Otherwise, you're not going to take this seriously. It has to be important. You have to understand these things as biblical principles that are going to govern your time management. Now, as we're moving into that, one of the first things that we need to do is we want to honor God this way is we need to set up boundaries. We need to set up boundaries and understand here are six things that I need to work on. I need to focus on. Here are my boundaries. Now, the boundaries, they need to be flexible enough that they can endure. But they need to be rigid enough that they stand. Up in Canada, there's a tower called the CN Tower. The CN Tower stands about 1,800 feet high. All right, that's a little more than a third of a mile. That is, if you took six football fields and lined them up and then stood them up on end, that's how tall this tower is. This tower was engineered, architecturally made so that it would sway, so that it would flex, because it needed to endure the constant 75-mile-an-hour winds that it would get. But it's rigid enough that it doesn't flex and hit the ground. It's rigid enough that it stands. And I believe that's how we need to make our boundaries. Because if you make boundaries that are too rigid, something comes up and it tries to flex it, it breaks through. And what happens? You get disappointed. You don't feel like rebuilding that boundary because it didn't work. If they're too flexible, then you might as well not have boundaries at all because they're just flying all over the place. So you need a balance between those two. A lot of you know that I'm not a morning person. I'm not good at getting up in the morning. I'm not good at getting moving. And partially because of that, I need breakfast. Breakfast is an important meal for me. It helps give me energy and start to kind of jumpstart my day. And so for a long time, what I did was I ate a lot of fast food breakfast because it was easy. You just drive through the drive-thru, you grab a sandwich, you go on to work and get things done. And I realized, you know, this is not honoring to the body that God has given me. So I needed to set boundaries. And so I set a boundary and I said, I'm only going to eat fast food breakfast one day a week. Now, fast food lunch is a different topic. Fast food breakfast one day a week. And that day of the week is normally Sunday, so you'll see me with my McDonald's sweet tea. So that's my treat. There's a little bit of flex in there because some mornings I do have a hectic morning. And so I might need to stop one extra day, but that's a flex. But it's rigid enough to come back and say, my boundary is one day a week. What I've done, I've got skim milk down in the refrigerator downstairs. I've got Raisin Bran in my office. While I'm doing some of my early morning stuff, I'm eating a bowl of Raisin Bran. It's better for me. We need to set up boundaries. Some of you need to set up boundaries like that on your exercise program. Some of you have decided that you want to exercise, but your boundaries have been too rigid and it broke and you got discouraged. Some of you need to set up boundaries on your work. You need to say, I'm going to leave at this time because you tend to stay late every day. And that cuts into your evening, it cuts into your family time, and you need to set up that boundary. Speaking of work, there's another tip that we can do that can help us get out of work on time. And that is to set artificial deadlines on realistic goals. Artificial deadlines on realistic goals. Many of us have had a vacation coming up, or we've had a three-day weekend coming up, and you will push to get everything done that you need to get done for that next week. You'll push aside things that are unimportant, you'll not answer certain phone calls, and you will get done what you need to get done, and it's because you have a deadline. So what you do is you set that up for yourself. You make an artificial deadline. You say, I'm going to get this done by this time because it needs to be done. And you set those deadlines. And you do so with realistic goals. In a book that I'm reading, called Making Room for Life. I'm reading alongside with this series. Great book by Randy Frazee. He says that the experts say that when you're setting goals at work, you need to set 4 hours worth of work up. You need to plan for 4 hours worth of work. Now, some people might be thinking, that's just 4 hours worth of work. If you would do an inventory of your time at work, the things that you plan on doing probably fall under a four-hour category. Because the rest of the time, you've got people coming to you. They've got other things they need. And we're not even talking about cheating at work. We're talking about work-related phone calls, work-related interruptions, work-related emergencies, things that come up, and you don't get done the things. So if you're planning 8 hours worth of work, and you've got 4 hours worth of interruption, then you've got a 12-hour day. And if you're trying to get out of there by 6, it's not going to happen. So according to the experts, 4 hours worth of work. Plan 4 hours worth of work and do so the day before. Plan your priorities, plan your work the day before so that when you come in that day, you know exactly what you need to get done that day. You know exactly what you need to get done and you take off with it. All right, so if you can pull that off, then you're getting home from work in a more consistent time. But what about all the other stuff after work? What about the kids' activities and groceries and general running around? What about dinner and laundry and mowing the lawn and other household chores? Let me meddle just a little bit. You think that your kids need to be involved in this and this and this and this to have a healthy social life? You think that you need to be involved in this and this and this and you've got all these other things that are demanding on your time? We're too busy. We live with our lives just slapped up against our limit. We have to realize we have limits. You need to trim the fat out of your daily routine. And you're not going to listen to that until you're to the point where you've gotten pressed so far, you're about to pull your hair out and you're saying, something's got to change. I'm on the edge of a nervous breakdown. You're not going to listen to this advice until you're there. Please. Fast forward to that point this morning and realize you cannot continue the way that you have been. You have to cut the fat out of your daily routine. Let me define fat. Fat consists of the low priority, small return items and activities that you are involved in. Things that are low return, small return, low priority. A small priority in your life. We spend a lot of our time on these things. Step back. Think about it. Get a clear mind this morning. Think about the activities that you're involved in. Think about what's truly more important to your child. To sit down and have a relaxed evening dinner together as a family. Where you can talk and get to know each other. Where you can build that relationship. Where you can share about the difficulties of your day and of their day. And where you build a bond with your child that will stay with them for as long as you're alive and even past that because of the wisdom you've been able to pass on to them during these evening times. What's more important, that or running them from the soccer field to the basketball court, changing their uniform in the car while you're grabbing fast food from one place to the next and you're breaking every traffic law known to man because you got to get them there on time. And then you get home to find out that there's homework that needs to be done, or even worse, a report. And they're going to bed exhausted. You're going to bed exhausted. Look at that for a moment this morning. It's not healthy. You are focusing your life on short-term things. How long is an athletic career? What is an athletic career going to do for your child? Maybe it will give them a scholarship to college. Even then, is that scholarship worth that valuable time that you have in developing a relationship with your child to pass on the wisdom that you've gained from your life, that you've gained from spending time with God and in God's Word? It's not worth it. We spend our time on these short-term, small-return, low-priority items in our life, and you need to trim the fat out. You need to trade it in for long-term, large-return, high-priority things like a relaxed evening that brings the stress level down, that encourages relationships. You and to move that direction instead of the fast food minivan bus on a mission. We need to slow down. In this lifestyle, we have lost the ability to have real relationships with people because we're just so busy. We need to slow down and we need to be able to have real relationships with people. We need to develop friendships with refrigerator rights. I like that term. That's a term used by a therapist by the name of Will Miller. And he says that friendships with refrigerator rights means that you can walk into their house, open their refrigerator, root through their leftovers, make yourself a sandwich, grab a drink. If it's the last Coke in the refrigerator, you're grabbing it, and you're sitting down at their table to have a meal. That's refrigerator rights. How many of us have friends like that? How many of us have relationships with people that are that close? Folks, that's what we're made for. Jesus said the two most important things were to love God and love others. We were made for relationships. In our busy, hectic lifestyle, he's X'd these out. We need to develop friendships with refrigerator rights. So we've touched on work, we've touched on exercise a bit, we've touched on healthy eating, intimate relationships. What about proper rest and relaxation? Now, as I shared with you last week, this series is a tough series for me. Because some of these areas are my weakest point in my spiritual walk. And this Sunday was the Sunday that I was describing. Because this topic, loving myself, taking care of myself, it is my worst spiritual discipline. And I'm just being completely transparent. Those of you who know me, you know that to be true. And among all the things I'm sharing with you information that makes me look like I'm a little miniature master of this topic. And I am in mind, but not in practice. And I am in mind because I know it's a problem for me. And anytime I'm around something, I scoop up the information. Anytime I see a book that's got this in it, I'll flip straight to the chapter that deals with this topic. And so this next thing about rest and relaxation, this is of the worst. This is my worst. And I get that from friends. Hey, Dusty, you need to rest a little more. But I believe this is a biblical principle. In God's word, we're told at the very beginning that God made the evening and the morning, the night and the day. He separated the light from the darkness. And that was the first day. And he said, it is good. To develop that further, on the fourth day in Genesis chapter 1, verse 14, he said that let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark the seasons and days and years. And let them be lights in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good, and there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. See, the sun and the moon were placed to govern the night, to mark as signs, to help us to understand the night from the day. I don't believe this is just something that God did because he thought it was a cool thing to do. I've shared with you guys before that I believe that creation was made for us. I believe the trees were made for mankind. I believe fruit was made for us. I believe the animals were made for us. I believe that not because I'm conceited, but I believe that because that's how I understand God's love for humans. We are his prized creation. I believe creation was made for us. And if I'm correct in understanding that, then that means the night and the day was made for us. There's a psychologist, by the name of Archibald Hart. I got a chance to sit in on one of this guy's seminars back in 2002. This guy knows his stuff. He's excellent in this area. And one of his specialties is sleep, is studying sleep. He noticed that when the sun came up, our bodies produce this thing called serotonin. Serotonin helps us to get fulfillment out of our day. It helps us to get joy out of our work, out of our accomplishments during the daylight hours. Something else he noticed is when the sun went down, this divine cycle that God started thousands of years ago, The serotonin converts into a thing called melatonin, a chemical that is a natural tranquilizer that slows us down. Now, this worked great for thousands of years until just recently. I mean, just a couple hundred years ago, with the invention of the light bulb, the invention of electricity. And what this did, this allowed us to extend our daytime hours into the night, well into the night for some of us. And what that does is that tells our body that it's still daylight. Our body doesn't produce the melatonin as high as it would if things were darker. And so we don't get to feeling tired. And the melatonin that is produced, it's negated because we fill our time, our extended daylight hours, with things that produce adrenaline. We're working more. We're thinking more. We're playing more. We're doing things that produce adrenaline. Adrenaline negates the tranquilizing effect of melatonin. What's even more sad than this is that melatonin is needed to create serotonin in the morning. So if you're reducing your amount of melatonin at night, then you're decreasing your amount of serotonin in the day, and you don't have a natural chemical inside your system that's allowing you to find fulfillment in life, to find joy in your work. And what we do is we supplement our lives with these chemicals to fix this imbalance that we lose because we're not sleeping. We're not staying on the natural cycle, the divine cycle that God set up thousands of years ago. So what do we do? What's the wise advice? You need to maintain a set bedtime. It's just that simple. You need to make sure that your evening is not crowded with adrenaline-inducing activities so that you can enjoy the effects of melatonin, so that you can relax. So that when it's time to lay your head down on the bed to get 8 hours of sleep, you're ready to go to sleep. Maintain a set bedtime. In your bulletins, at the top of the bulletin, you've got some different scriptures there. Mark 6, you might want to underline that and go to it later. That's the feeding of the 5,000. And I want you to look at that and see the importance that Jesus puts on rest. If you need more on that, that was in a sermon in a series called Living in the Red back in 2007. All right, beyond a set bedtime, you need to take a Sabbath rest. Also talked about in that series. God has designed us to work 6 days and to rest one day. Some people say, well, that's Old Testament. Our bodies haven't changed. You know, when Jesus Christ stepped foot on earth, our bodies didn't just go all of a sudden go, woo, I can work 7 days a week. In fact, Jesus tells us in the New Testament, he says the Sabbath, man wasn't made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for you. So take a rest, take a day off, work six, take one 24-hour period off. Another part about taking care of yourself is finding spiritual nourishment. You need to have regular and meaningful involvement at church. You won't get full spiritual nourishment sitting here on a Sunday morning. Yes, the goal here is to feed you with God's word, to provide just a buffet of God's wisdom for you to apply to your life. You can come here and you can worship. You can worship through song. You can worship through giving. You can join in God through communion. And yes, there is spiritual nourishment to be found here on Sunday morning, but you're not going to get full spiritual nourishment right here, right now. You have to get involved. You have to get involved with meaningful involvement, regular meaningful involvement. I don't know how many times I've heard, well, I'm just not getting anything out of church. Are you involved? That's why. And if you are, you're probably involved somewhere where you're not gifted. That's not meaningful involvement. Find a place where you're gifted and get involved. That's meaningful. And if you just do it every once in a while, that's not going to cut it either, because there are hills and there are valleys, even in places where you're gifted. Stick with it. Make it regular, meaningful involvement. Couple that with the stuff that we get here on Sunday mornings and Wednesday nights. And you'll start seeing that you are getting spiritual nourishment. And last, you need accountability. You need a friend. You need a brother or sister in Christ, and you need to be accountable to them. Let them ask the tough questions. Give them permission to meddle. Are you working hard? Or are you cheating at work? Are you taking time to exercise? Are you keeping the boundaries you set? Are you eating healthy meals? Are you slowing down and making room for intimate relationships with your spouse, with your children, with your friends? Are you getting proper rest and relaxation? Are you getting spiritual nourishment? Are you loving yourself? Or are you cheating on yourself? Each week as we look through these subjects, I want to bring up something that could be a snipe or something that's waiting to just knock you off. Because when you walk out of here, if you've bought into this, or if maybe you're over here and you're just saying, something's got to change. And you hear this information, this wisdom from God's word, and you're saying, you know what? This is good stuff. I want to apply this. There are going to be things waiting to knock you off. And so we're looking at challenges. Challenges to spiritual time management. Last week we looked at the challenge of focus versus distraction. Folks, we need to stay focused on this stuff. There are going to be plenty of things that are going to try to distract you away from living a life that honors God. Today, I want to add to that list that you are going to have priorities versus urgency. You have to view these things as biblical principles. Move them up to a high priority in your life and understand this is important to me, because I guarantee you there will be things that will come up and they will be urgent. But they're not important. And these urgent things will challenge the things that are important to you. So beware of that challenge. Priorities versus urgency. And remember, the guy in Ecclesiastes, Solomon, the wisest man in the world, said in chapter 3, there's a time for everything. There's a time and a season for every activity under heaven. Love yourself. Don't be a lover of yourself. Don't be conceited. This is not to pendulum out here and live a self-centered life. Not at all. But we do need to take care of ourselves. And I don't think we've been doing that. We need to do it for us. We need to do it for God. We need to do it for our friends. We need to do it for our families. Ecclesiastes 4:6 says, better one hand with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and a chasing after the wind. Now, a lot of us, this is how we live. We've got two handfuls of life. And we say, I've got so much life. So much I can't even hold it. Why don't I feel like I'm living? I've got life. You've been deceived. You need to take half of the things that you're holding on to and let go of them. Because better is one handful with tranquility than two handfuls, and you're just chasing after the wind. You need to simplify. You need to get rid of stuff. You need to trim the fat. You need to set boundaries. You need to settle for one handful and find the peace that God has waiting for you. Find the life that God has waiting for you.